UK Wine Show, show number 194. The Still Wines of Portugal with Sonia Fernandez. G'day, my name's Christopher Scott and welcome to this week's UK Wine Show. And this week we talk with Sonia Fernandez from Wines of Portugal. Now most people have heard of port, but the still wines of Portugal can be excellent and gaining an international reputation, providing good quality wines at a good price. We talked with Sonia about Portuguese wine industry and some of the varieties and regions to look out for. On a personal note, I'm slowly going batty with the RSS feeds. You may recall last week we had some problems with the feed and I made some changes and it seemed to fix it. iTunes though had stopped working and after much cursing and muttering underneath my breath, it looks like the shows are back into the iTunes store at last. Phew, quite a painful bit of time rewriting our code to produce the right RSS feeds. The fault appears to be in my feed, but it's been like that for almost 200 shows now, and it only recently stopped working, so I'm not quite sure what went wrong, but it all seems to be tidied up now. And it was a bit of a mystery for me. A mystery for you, though, is this week's grape variety. Now, as usual, I'm going to give you two clues, one now and one just before the interview, and I'll give you the answer at the end. So see if you can work out what this week's mystery grape variety is. The white grape variety is a fairly recent German cold hardy crossing of Müller-Thurgau and Segrieb. The grape produces full-flavoured and flowery wines that often lack acidity, but can reach high levels of ripeness, and ultimately that means alcohol, quite important in these cool regions. It ripens early, but produces unpleasant bitter flavours if the wine is picked too soon. If picked late, however, QMP wine, that's German category for a superior wine, can be produced, even after a cool, dull summer, which is why it suits England climate so well. If we think about that, I'm going to give you another clue after the news, which is coming up next with Jane.
Cheers, Chris. A French court case is underway after a year of investigations surrounding Ian J. Gallo's 2007 Red Bicyclette and Pinot Noir, and claims that the wine was made with lower quality, less expensive grapes that weren't in fact Pinot Noir. The wine supplied amounted to a massive €4 million, that's £3.5 million, sold to Gallo between 2006 and 2008. Investigators became suspicious after realising that the amount of Pinot Noir being exported from the Languedoc-Roussillon area far exceeded historic levels. 13 people, including executives from two wineries, five cooperatives, Négociant Ducasse and conglomerate Sir Dark, have been charged.
While the attention is all on the suppliers Ernst and Gallo, who are the producers of Red Bicyclette, it is surprising that such a large, sophisticated company could not work out that they were selling incorrect labelled wines. How can one of the largest companies in the world, involved in a multi-million pound deal, not understand the local market? At least to get an idea of the size of the market that they may grow into. According to Wine Spectator, between 2005 and 2008, the Oud department, part of Languedoc, was exporting 160 million bottles of Pinot Noir annually. The problem? The entire Languedoc area only produces 67 million bottles of Pinot Noir each year. Perhaps after the negotiations, they took a Sergeant Schultz from Hogan's Hero line. I know nothing! Luckily, because the case involved fraudulent labels of wine being sold in the US, the American Alcohol and Tobacco Tax and Trade Bureau, TTB, began its own investigation once it learned of the story. What's the next story about fizz, Jane?
Well, champagne sales made a bit of a comeback in the last 2 months of 2009, helped by a strong performance in the French domestic markets and sales growth in the UK. According to AC Nielsen, sales in France were up 8.6% in volume and by 6.3% in value, and in the UK, take-home trade sales were up 3% in both volume and value. But overall, shipments for the year were down 10% on 2008, so whether the short-term recovery, helped by Christmas discounting, will last into 2010 still remains to be seen.
We spoke with Jamie Hutchinson from The Sampler last week, who said the fizz market was coming back. Hopefully it's going to be back to its buoyant self before the planned expansion of Champagne, which is due for completion in 2015. What's the last story, Jane?
Finally this week, vines planted as a trial 4 years ago in Perthshire, Scotland, will be harvested for the first time this year to produce the first ever Scottish wine. Top chef and hotel owner Peter Gotkins is planning to produce a crisp white wine to put on the wine list at his hotel restaurant, but he needs a warm summer to produce a decent wine. If the grapes aren't good enough, he will turn his crop into vinegar, but if he succeeds, he wants to expand the 48 Bacchus and Madeleine Angevine vines to 800 once he knows which of the varieties grows best on the banks of Loch Tay. That's it from me, but don't forget to check out our website, 3050.co.uk.
Cheers, Jane. I'm not confident of decent wine being made, but at least they've got the option of producing some vinegar. You may recall about 150 shows ago, we interviewed geologist Richard Seeley, who said that they may be making wine in Scotland in about 50 years' time. Well, between 50 and 100 years' time. But reading this article made me think about it. Even if global warming does mean that temperatures will warm enough for grapes, the higher latitudes mean that they simply may not get enough sun to ripen the grapes. After all, the sun's rays and intensity of energy delivered does decrease quite quickly at the higher latitudes. But good luck to them. I'm not holding my breath. Unless, of course, the Met Office tells us of another barbecue summer, like last year, in which case I definitely hold no hope for him this year. High latitudes can limit the development of sugar, but also change the way flavours and tannins are developed. Over the next month or two, we're going to be looking at some of the chemicals in wine in our spotlight. And this week, we're looking at polyphenols as a big class. So the spotlight this week, polyphenols, also known as phenolics and polyphenolics. They're a group of chemicals found and produced by plants. They include a number of important components in wine, such as tannins, flavors, also known as flavonoids. Flavonoids includes chemicals for flavor, but also importantly for red wines, they include color, which is known as anthocyanins. In general, high levels of polyphenols are found in the skins of most plants, as well as the seeds and stems. That's why tannins and color and some flavors are extracted from the skins by leaving the skin in contact with the juice, known as maceration, and is essential for red wine production. Phenolic acids are common in the flesh of grapes and are also in red wines, but are more important to white wines as they don't have the skin contact. While phenolics often come from the grapes themselves, vanillin is also a phenolic and produces a vanilla flavour associated with wines that have been oak-aged. It's generally thought that polyphenols have an antioxidant effect, and while no mechanism has been accepted as true, wines that have dark skins and high tannins are likely to be the healthiest of wines to drink, particularly helping to reduce heart disease. I think I mentioned that last week. Okay, that ends the spotlight. I'm going to keep these technical ones, particularly on the chemicals and wine, quite short. Right, next up we have our mystery grape variety. Our mystery grape variety, as well as being produced in Germany and England, is also found in Canada. The main problem is it's susceptible to fungal disease, rot, and coliure, the latter being a problem which causes the berries to fall off soon after flowering. According to German wine literature, it's named after the Spanish philosopher José Ortega Gasset. Well, that's the last clue in our rather tough grape variety this week. If you're not into cool climate wines, it is a bit of a toughie. I'll give you the answers after the interview, which is coming up next. We're talking with Sonia Fernandez from the Wines of Portugal. We talked to her about Portuguese still wine. Let's have a listen to what she has to say. Hi, I'm here with Sonia Fernandez. How are you, Sonia?
I'm very well, thank you.
Excellent. And you're from the Wines of Portugal?
That's correct.
We're going to be talking about Portuguese wine, and in particular the still wines today, because everybody knows about port. But the still wines are making some great progress in the last couple of years. You're from Portugal?
Yes, I am from the Lisbon office in Portugal, yes.
Okay, and what's your areas of responsibility?
Well, I have three markets at the moment. It's the UK, Brazil, and Angola. Yeah. So I am heading the three markets at the moment.
Angola seems like a strange place.
It might sound a little bit strange, but
UK, maybe Holland, but Angola.
We have many other countries actually. I'm working these three other countries, but we work other countries like Germany, Canada, United States, the Nordic countries like Sweden. But Angola is it's the biggest country, the biggest importing country for wines of Portugal.
Really?
Yes, in terms of value and volume.
Really? Do they speak Spanish or Portuguese?
No, they speak Portuguese.
Spanish and Portuguese are quite similar, aren't they?
Yes. They are very similar.
Okay, so that's probably why you've got quite a good connection there, is it?
That's correct. We've been, Angola was part of Portugal for many years, until 1974, so there is a cultural link.
Okay, and Brazil, obviously. Like...
The same thing. Brazil is the same thing.
So let's talk a wee bit about the wines of Portugal. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you've got the Douro Valley, but there's more to Portugal than Douro Valley. Can you give us a sort of 10,000 feet view of the still wines in particular?
Mm-hmm. We produce still wines from the north to the south of the country. We have...
just so in case people don't know where Portugal is.
Portugal is in the Iberian Peninsula, so we're right beside Spain.
Yep.
And we are on the coast. We're surrounded by the Atlantic and the Mediterranean on the south.
You're on the west side of Spain, really.
And we're on the west side of Spain, that's
it's
correct.
It's funny how it's like, it's almost like Spain is one place and then there's this carved out area of Portugal on the side.
So we produce still wine from north to the south, from the Minho region, Vinho Verde, you've heard of it, and then the Douro and Bairrada, and the South Algarve, and Alentejo, which is very popular, and the Lisbon region. We're producing amazing wines from all these regions in the country. Whites, reds, rosés. We've been doing a great progress because we were traditionally a country of red wine, mm-hmm. and we've been making great progress in the whites and in the rosés as well.
Okay.
Yes, and very fresh, very aromatic, with good acidity.
I suppose a lot of listeners probably would have heard of the Douro Valley because that's where the ports come from.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I've always associated the reds coming from as well. Is that wrong? Or
no, that's not wrong. The Douro Valley produces really, really good and really, well, it's been some of the most famous and prized wines in Portugal. But we do have other regions producing really good red ones, like the Alentejo, for instance. And traditionally, the Bairrada and Down regions, which I don't know if are familiar to you, but those are really strong regions for reds. The Touriga Nacional, I don't know if you've ever heard.
It's that's a grape variety. Yeah,
it's our most famous grape variety. It's originally from the Down. So you can find beautiful red wines from that grape and other grape varieties, obviously.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
The Galician close, Spain, has Albarino, and I understand it's grown in Portugal as well, but it's not called Albarino, is it?
It's called Alvarinho. It's Alvarinho. The same grape variety, and we've been growing that grape forever. It's one of the most traditional grape varieties in Portugal, and that's what the Vinho Verde was most popular for. There are other grape varieties for Vinho Verde nowadays.
I was going to say, because
yes, there are, like Loureiro and other ones. But Alvarinho is a big one. And we've been producing for many, many, many years in the northwest part of Portugal, the Vinho Verde region.
Okay, and would Vinho Verde be probably the most famous white wine, or?
It was. It has been traditionally the most famous white wine in Portugal. And again, but we have other regions now growing fast and in quality, namely one in the south, which is close to Lisbon. It's called Península de Setúbal. That's where the Muscatel comes from. Probably you've known Setúbal for the Muscatel, the sweet wine. It's a sweet wine.
I know Muscatel.
Okay, we have three kinds of sweet wines in Portugal. We have the Port, very popular. We have the Madeira, very popular as well, and the Muscatel from Setúbal. There's also Muscatel in the Douro, but the Muscatel from Setúbal, so this part close to Lisbon, it's very popular now, and I think the UK market is actually finding out the Muscatel now. And
how's
very
it made?
About
is it a still wine, or is it fortified?
It's just like
wine?
It's a fortified wine where you use the brandy to stop fermentation. So it's just like a port or a Madeira. But again, that region is producing very good white wines. But again, the Vinho Verde is maybe the most famous for the white wines, the region, and it actually produces amazing.
I've been trying a Verdello from New Zealand, of all places.
Okay.
And Verdello is quite a, it's a Portuguese
grape variety.
Exactly. Yes. Do you make still wines out of that?
Oh, yes, we do. We do, all over. From the north to the south, again. Verdello is very used for Portuguese wines.
I always associate it with Madeira.
That too, but it's a different type of grape variety, though. It's like the Albarinho in Galicia and the Alvarinho in Portugal. Actually, they are the same grape variety, but they behave differently.
Slightly different clones.
And they exactly. So it's the same thing. In the mainland, it gives great white wines, and in Madeira, the fortified wines with Verdejo wine.
If I was to go, right, I'm going to buy myself a case of four different wines, mm-hmm. two whites, two lots of white, two white, lots of red. What wines, not necessarily producers,
but you talk about regions.
Yeah, if I want to get some diversity in styles and see what's going on.
You putting me in a very in a very difficult situation. First, because quite honestly, I think all of the regions produce really, really good and worth while trying wines. But I could probably tell you that you should try just to be different. The Douro and the Alentejo and the Vinho Verde, they're very popular. You already know that. But if you want to try something different for a chance, so whites, I would go to Península de Setúbal and I would get white wines from there. And I would get some nice red wines from the Douro and Bairrada regions. So you'd get like a box of each. Okay. One box of Bairrada, one box of Douro. You would definitely be impressed with the Touriga Nacional in Douro.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Because I always think of Touriga Nacional as quite a heavy wine. Is it heavy or is that just the way that's been?
No, it really depends, again, on the region, because the plant, I mean, the grape variety really tastes and behaves differently according to the regions in Portugal. And it's amazing to see that. If you do a tasting of Touriga Nacional with different from different regions, you will find differences. It's very floral. I don't consider it heavy at all. I mean, actually, I think it's a very round and very, very nice bodied wine, the Touriga Nacional.
Okay, and how's business? Is it obviously a lot of there's a recession going on, so a lot of countries are.
Yeah, actually, we're very happy with with 2009 for many reasons. First, because we haven't lose market quota in any market. On the contrary, we have grown in many markets like Canada, the United States, Brazil. So we gained quota, and our sales grew from last year. Actually, the first semester of 2009. We had exported almost as much as we had exported in 2008 together. So not the same amount, but about, and I'm throwing a number here, but about 55 to 60% in the first semester of what we had exported already in 2008. So it was a really, really good year for the Portuguese wine.
Okay.
For many reasons. I can tell you probably why, because Portuguese wines are very good in terms of value for money.
Yeah.
And so I think people are starting to realize that. You don't need to have a 40-pound bottle to have a great Portuguese wine. You can find that for $17.99 or for £20. And also because I think people are discovering the diversity, how different Portuguese wines can be.
Okay.
And they're enjoying it, I think.
The EU has invested a lot of money into Portugal in terms of improving vineyards and equipment, very similar to what they did in Spain as well.
That's right.
How long ago did they start the investment? And is it still going on? Or?
Yes, it's still going on. It started about 20 years ago, the investment. So Portugal modernized very much the winemaking techniques. If you go to Portugal nowadays, you'll see that almost all of the wineries have top machinery, use top techniques to produce wine. In Portugal, there was a lot of vineyards being replanted and so on. So there was a great investment, and it's presently one of the biggest economic sectors in Portugal. It's the wine industry.
Oh, okay. Yes. And how's it categorized? Is it small independent growers, large multinationals? What's your typical Portuguese producer?
We have both. Mainly, we have small independent producers, but about 55% of the production is made by big companies. So we have small producers, and we have some big companies that account for a great part of our production.
Is Portuguese driven by brands, or is it more driven by
styles or regions?
Yeah, how's the marketing mix gone?
You do have both, really. You do have small brands doing very, very well in the international markets and in Portugal as well. Remember that about 70% of the wine produced in Portugal is consumed in Portugal.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we export about 33%. The national market is a big market for us. So again, we have both things. Big brands like, yeah, I can definitely tell, like everybody knows, like Sograp and Espurão and Aveleda that produces the Vinho Verde. Those are big brands that everybody knows. They produce very, very good wines. But we have very small independent growers. They're doing very well, extremely well with their brands, like João Portugal Ramos, for instance. Bacalhau is one of the big ones. You've heard of it as well, for sure. But we definitely have both. We have very small independent growers that are doing very well in international markets.
Some companies have these generic bodies, and you represent generic body. Mm-hmm. Do you represent all of Portuguese growers? How's your funding put together?
All of Portuguese growers. We represent everybody. We are an interprofessional association. We're private, private association that promotes Portuguese wines. So we're a trade association. All producers are part of Vini Portugal. We're financed by the Ministry of Agriculture that passes on to us part of the promotion taxes that producers pay. So we represent everybody.
Oh, okay. So everybody pays a compulsory tax that you get a slice of,
yes,
to run.
That's correct. That's exactly
body.
It.
Excellent. Okay, now that sounds good. And the last question, one of the things that seems to be gathering pace in the wine industry at the moment is a move to more sustainable viticulture. If you've got a lot of small producers, it's probably not so bad. But what's sustainable viticulture like? Does it have a presence in Portugal? Is there an organic movement there? How does that fit in?
Yes, there is. Again, there are many changes happening in Portugal in the last 10 years, basically. And producers in Portugal used to say something that I find very, very interesting, which is they don't almost need to be certified as organic because they already are. Okay.
But you're on the western coast. There must be a lot of rain.
Yeah. Well, there's. Well, we have both. We have a lot of rain, but we have a lot of sun as well. We're a very sunny country.
It's true.
Believe it or not.
No,
we
I
are.
Do believe you.
So we have these microclimates, which are just perfect for viticulture.
So again, you get a bit of rain shadow.
Yes, yes. So again, we are, and we have both things. We have the influence from the sea, and we have the influence from the mountains. Mm-hmm. So the mountains kind of cut some of the more aggressive winds and rains and so on. So it's very good. That happens a lot in the Douro. Even though it rains a lot in the Douro, they can have summers that are very, very hot. The Alentejo, for instance, which is plain, they have hotter summers and hotter days. So that's why they produce totally different wines. But again, going back to the biodynamic and to the organic producing, we have a very strong group of producers working on those techniques already. The way viticultural is done nowadays in Portugal, it's almost all organic. Most of the producers don't use any kind of pesticides or anything. So,
yeah. Excellent. All right then, Sonia, I think we'll wrap it up there. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
No problems. Okay, that's the interview this week. I spent a bit of time with Sonia after the interview tasting some really lovely examples of Portuguese wines. What surprised me was the freshness of the wines, particularly the whites. The wines were alive, and while Portugal can do big blockbuster wines, they also produce wines with real finesse. A mystery grape variety doesn't grow well in Portugal. It likes it cold. But do you know which variety it is? It is Ortega. Here are the clues again. The white grape Ortega is a fairly recent German cold hardy crossing of Müller Thurgau and Segrib. According to German wine literature, it's named after Spanish philosopher José Ortega Gasset. But why is a mystery? The grape produces very full-flavoured and flowery wines that often lack acidity but can reach high levels of ripeness, which ultimately means high levels of alcohol, quite important in cool-growing regions. Ortega ripens early but produces unpleasant bitter wines if it's picked too soon. If it's picked late, however, QMP wines, that's the German category for superior wines, can be produced, even after a dull, cool summer, which is why the grape suits the English climate. Also found in Canada, Ortega's main problem is its susceptibility to fungal disease, rot and coliere, the latter being a problem which causes the berries to fall off soon after flowering. Right, almost finished the show for this week. I did have a message on my Facebook from John in Loire, and he pointed out that Waitrose is selling Taste Number 5, which is to say it's an umami concentrate. For those who want to try it, it's $2.99 and could be a thing to add a bit of zing to your dishes. I raised it because next week we're going to be talking with Tim Harney, Master of Wines, and he describes himself as the Swami from umami. I recorded a show with Tim at Bendham Trade Tasting about probably 3 weeks ago, and Tim has been doing some interesting work on food and wine matching, as well as talking about umami with us. So it's something to look forward to next week. But to finish up this week, it is a quote, and since we were talking about Portuguese wine, I thought a Portuguese proverb would be the ticket of the day. All wine would be port, if it could. Pretty easy, not a French or Italian proverb, is it? Until next week, cheers and good drinking.
The UK Wine Show is a weekly podcast brought to you by 3050, the wine tasting company. The show is produced by Chris Scott and the news is read by Jane Scott. To listen to other shows, visit ukwineshow.co.uk. Thank you for listening.